Blog Talk Radio.
Trap your body, lock your mind. See you rising, wanna stop your crime. Sell the drugs they sold to us and call it drug bust. Grab they money, double product, then they lock you up, it's fucked up. They stand they ground, you better bow on yours and tough luck. We start rebelling cause they failed us, man, enough's enough. We bring a pistol, they got kids. We got rocks, they got grenades. Waving tanks all in your face. Ah. Look at what you made. You're trying to send the mud, then get mad when we decayed and enraged. We played this old game since we was raised. Until we load the cartridge, blow that dust up in your face. Ah. Yeah, this shit is bad, dog. Under five black skin and got a black ball. Yeah, this shit is fucked up. No more cries, time to ride if they act up.
Good evening, everybody. What's up, what's up? Welcome to this evening's YB radio show. It's the Hood to Hood wake-up call. Tonight, hosting, we have myself, Shalice, and we have Keith, a.k.a. The Immaculate. What's up, y'all? Y'all on the line with me this evening?
Yo, yo, can you hear me?
Peace, 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 everybody. What's up, like?
What's up, everybody? How y'all doing tonight?
I'm good.
Just another night, very excited and ready for this evening. So we can go ahead and we're going to go ahead and get started with the hot topic. Shalice, I'm going to go ahead and let you kick that off for us.
Okay, well, again, peace to everybody. Hope everyone is having a wonderful week so far. We're a couple days away from Kwanzaa, so everybody get excited. The 26th is when Kwanzaa starts, so if you are not celebrating somewhere, and you are in Baltimore, you can definitely come out and support the PLM fam. They are having a Kwanzaa celebration. It's going to last for the entire duration of Kwanzaa. I actually attend the PLM African Awareness and Critical Thinking Study class, and I think it's pretty dope. There are some righteous, beautiful, conscious, positive people. So, yes. For the entire duration of Kwanzaa, they're going to be having this event. And I'll have the information posted on the YBE Facebook page as well. Okay, so that's the first hot topic that we're covering. The second is on January 8th. YBE will be the spotlight organization for January's Come Together event. If you don't know what Come Together is, then once we get Kiera on the line, she's definitely going to fill you in. But in short, Come Together is a social activist mixer where people who are definitely involved in this struggle, who are involved in making changes in their community, you can come together and link up with some other people who are about that work as well. We have to support each other. We have to network with each other to create a support system for ourselves. Another thing that I want to touch on is today is the 10-year anniversary of my beloved mother's death. So I just want to lift her up, the name of Sandy B. I miss her like crazy. But I know that she's smiling down and she's proud of the things that JB and myself are doing. So if you could just take a moment, you know, just whisper a little prayer for my mama, for me and my family. You know, it's a hard time of year for us. And what else did I have?
But we'll be here with you, Lisa, so don't you worry about it. You have your conscious brothers and sisters as well as all of your brothers and sisters here with you at all times. And I know Sandy's looking down, smiling. I've never met her, but just from everything that I've heard from you, I know she's proud of the daughter that she has and looking down at what you've become. So just know she's proud of you, and we're all with you and praying for you, honey.
Look, don't make me cry. But
yeah, and many. I want to make sure I tell you many positive and beautiful blessings to you and your family, and just positive vibes towards you all, because, you know, that's definitely necessary in times like that. So just, I just wish that y'all, you know, receive, and I send my positive vibrations towards y'all, you know, to, you know, just be able to get through these moments, because I know how tough they are, especially around the holidays, especially. So you're definitely, you're in my thoughts and you're in my prayers.
And I just want to say also, y'all, just, you know, keep, as I said, it's immaculate. He is one of the people on the amazing song that I played for y'all at the beginning of the show. He's also going to be a male voice that I hope to have more on this show and a big contributor to YB, especially in the beginning of the growth process, the logo, just talking stuff out with me and just figuring out what I'm trying to do. He's been instrumental in that, so I'm very excited to have a male voice. So I just want to say thank you, Keith, for joining us tonight. And I know I'm excited to have you on, and it'll be a great contribution to the show. So
well, I think we should go ahead and, you know.
Thank you.
Okay, we're not going to take up too much time. The last couple of things that I want to touch on, you know, around the holidays, it seems like a time when we're losing a lot of people. And I have a very close friend, one of my sisters from high school, who is a beautiful individual. She actually just lost her partner, the father of her child. He actually just died this past week. So, Tierra, I'm not sure if you're listening or if anyone who is with her is listening, but, baby, we love you. We are here for you, your Western sister. We're all here to support you, honey. So whatever you need, make sure you reach out to us. And, you know, to our listeners out there, if you have friends or family members who are, you know, having a hard time during this time of year, make sure that you reach out to them. Make sure that, you know, you check in on them and see how they're dealing. You know, the holidays are, everyone's not celebrating. You know, this is a tough time of year, and our homicide rates are at their highest. So, you know, there's a lot of people out there who's missing a loved one, and we're definitely going to touch on that tonight. We're going to talk about not only the police brutality that's gripping our nation, but also the gun violence in our communities. You know, we must stop killing each other. That's a fact. Our nation could not continue to grow. We cannot continue to flourish if we do not stop the epidemic of killing that is within our community. So without further ado, I'm getting ready to bring my queen friend on. I know she over there.
Yes, wow. Queen. Yes. Yes, queen. Yes.
This lady, Miss Butler, she is personally my inspiration. You know, I dare to even call her a role model. When the riots hit, when the uprising took place in Baltimore, I actually said she was doing out in the community, and I said, you know what, like, where have I been? Like, I need to be involved in this. I need to be, you know, not just watching this from the comfort of my Facebook page and from my TV. I need to be out here with these sisters. And from then on, you know, I just started my path to righteousness. If you do not know, you need to get familiar, because she is a social justice activist here in Baltimore. She is the organizer of the monthly Come Together event at Red Emma's. She's going to touch on that. And she also happens to be one of the leaders in the Justice for Tyrone West movement. And she's going to tell us all about that. That's one of the first things that we're going to discuss tonight. So give me 1 second.
Hi, everybody. I'm here.
Peace, queen.
Oh, my goodness. Thank y'all so much. I'm, like, blushing. Like, the entire time you were talking, I'm like, wow. Like, I think I'm just so humbled by the whole experience of everything that I do, that it's so funny when I hear other people talk about me. It's like, really? People look at me like that? It's
so... I
just really thank y'all. I thank y'all for this opportunity. And before I even get started, I just want to tell you that you're in my prayers right now, because, you know, I understand the loss of a loved one and how it can affect you and your family during the holidays. So I just wanted to start that off by telling you that I'm praying for you. And
thank you, Mama. I appreciate that.
Yes, ma'am. And, oh, gosh, where do I start?
We're going to start with you. Tell us about you.
It's so much. I would call myself the average citizen before July 18th of 2013. You know, I fully believed in respectability politics, and, you know, if you work hard and you do everything, quote unquote, the right way, that that life will be fine and that you can achieve. And I got a rude awakening about that when the police brutally beat to death my cousin. July 18th of 2013, 11 to 15 Baltimore City police officers and one Morgan State police officer brutally beat to death Tyrone West in the neighborhood of Kitmore and Kelway, and that's in, like, northeast Baltimore, for a traffic stop, an illegal traffic stop at that. The neighbors, you know, this is like a middle-class neighborhood. The neighbors tell you how, you know, he was screaming for help. He was begging them to stop beating him, and they just did not stop. And something like that really takes your sense of reality and throws it out the window. And that's really what happened to me. And just seeing how corrupt the system was firsthand was kind of like disheartening. That's what made the respectability politics in me fall apart, because, you know, I see these people who are in these public seats who, you know, they tell you if you go about things the right way, that things will work out for you. And that just really did not happen at any step of the process. Any information that my family found out, it was because we pressured them. We stood in front of their offices every week. We put together with other organizers a weekly protest called West Wednesdays. Matter of fact, it's going on right now. I actually was going to do.
I said, yeah, it's going on right now.
Right, I actually was going to be out there and do the talk radio from there, but I'm still getting over a cold, so I was like, no, let me sit it out. But every week we did a weekly protest, and that was actually a big initiative in Baltimore. That is what started the police brutality acknowledgement in the city way before Freddie Gray. Because of my family pushing. I know a big article came out with the Sun paper because of the initiative that my family had been pushing so hard for, to acknowledge the fact that brutality is an issue in the Baltimore City Police Department. And that's what stemmed the initial Department of Justice investigation to come into Baltimore before Freddie Gray and before the uprisings. Like, we were on top of it. And even in that process, it still showed me that the system was corrupt. We got more of a reaction from the system after the riot. So it kind of really spoke heavy to what the system reacts to, because they didn't react when, you know, we had people who were doing things, quote unquote, the right way and peacefully and orderly. Nobody helped us. As soon as a couple people break a couple windows, everybody's here. The Department of Justice here, Loretta Lynch is here, having meetings with us, wanting to know what they can do. And none of that happened before. But none of that happened before because they really did not care. And I kind of have been realizing that more and more in my journey of just being awake to how things really go. And that's what prompted me to create Come Together, because I saw a lot of, especially the riots, like, exaggerated every problem that there was in Baltimore and made it 10 times bigger. And I noticed the bickering between organizations and people, and how people would go to organizations and say, hey, I have this skill, I want to help. And that organization that they went to really wasn't good with those kind of needs. So instead of passing that information along to people who could use that person and that skill, they would kind of just hoard it. And I noticed it, and I'm like, you know, this is, you're disadvantaging the population. Like, you're disadvantaging the people that really need us. So I wanted to create a safe space where people can share their gifts, share their organizations with everyone, and everyone is aware of what people's gifts are, because everybody can't do everything. Everybody is meant to do certain things. And unless we give people a safe space to tell what they are, we'll never know. We'll keep wanting to put people in different spaces. So that's what made me create Come Together, which I think is awesome. And from there, I also, because I know you guys are also talking about the gun violence, I've noticed a lot of organizations and people will throw up, well, you know, you guys are talking about this thing, but you're not talking about, you know, our brothers killing each other. And I would listen to that, and I would say, well, why don't you talk about it, or why don't you come out here and protest and stand with us? Because we all care about these same issues. It's not a, you know, up us against them kind of thing. It's more of a, this is an issue affecting all of us, and we need you to take ownership of this issue. You can't keep passing the buck to other people. It's time for everybody to find their gift and take action. So after the murder of Kendall Fenwick in Park Heights, I got together with some other community leaders and just expressed my concern and discussed with how that happened to him, somebody who was trying to do things the right way. And we're actually putting together from that a listening campaign for violence in the city, because what's important for me is, if we're going to address the violence in the city, I have to do it in a way that does not take away the humanity that has already been stripped away from our people. I refuse to be a part of that. I refuse to acknowledge that. We've already had our humanity stripped from us. I refuse to point the finger at or dehumanize my brothers any more than they've already been. So, this is kind of giving that sense of humanity to our people and a voice to our people that some people don't even realize exists. So that's another project that I'm a part of. Another thing, which is really, really interesting right now, it's kind of off topic from this, but is the women in the movement. I kind of feel like the women don't get enough credit, especially in Baltimore, and we've really been pushing this movement along the entire time. So I'd actually gotten involved with some people, including Eve Ensler, who did the Vagina Monologues, and she connected me with some people who are giving a summit at Columbia University in March, and so I'm actually helping them coordinate that in March, to acknowledge women, especially women of color, in the movement, and put together a panel for that. So I need my ladies there. I'm actually trying to organize it in a way that I get a bus up there on that Saturday of it so that we can partake in the event that entire day. So everyone just... I'm sorry?
I said let me know. You know I'm on it.
I definitely will. I'll be talking about that a lot more coming up, and also some other things with Eve Ensler. She has an organization called V-Day, so I'm actually trying to coordinate something with that. So these are all the projects that I'm working on right now. And also a family tour next year. It's a lot going on next year. But that's pretty much me in a nutshell right now.
Well,
hello, can you hear me?
Hi.
Hey, how you doing? I would definitely like to thank you and salute you for just really being persistent and what you're doing. I haven't had the pleasure of following you up until just now when I hit the follow button, but I was following Tawanda. And I believe that's your cousin or your sister?
That's my cousin. Yes.
Cousin. Okay. And I don't even remember how I came to follow her in this. But I just know that I constantly, like every day on my timeline, would see, you know, her out like fighting for her brother, and I was like, man, like I wish I had somebody who loved me that much that would honestly do that. And it just made me think about us as a community. Like, I wish us as a community would care about each other enough to do that for everyone's claim, you know, unjustly, whether it be from cops or what have you. And that goes into what you were talking about before about, you know, people who say, oh, well, you're not talking about black-on-black violence. You're just talking about, you know, police killing us. And it's like, well, if the people who really, like, if that's in the forefront of your mind, black-on-black violence more so than the police brutality, then cool, let's get out here together. You stand next to me. You can have a sign to say, you know, brothers stop killing each other. I can have a sign to say police stop killing us. Like, I don't care. Let's just get the message out there. And
right.
I just, it really is inspiring. Like, it really is inspiring to see, you know, you guys as a family come together and really rally and not give up. And, like, I'm really motivated by it. So, thank you.
Thank you.
So I wanted to just ask I don't know if you said it, excuse me, you know, I was digesting everything you said, but where are you guys on the case at this present moment? The last I read, I know there was lawsuits filed, there were, you know, things of that nature. So what's the current status of what's going on with Tyrone's case?
Everything is pending. It's so funny, too, because we had created September of 2014, so before Freddie Gray or any of the riots or anything, we had created a list of demands that we wanted from our elected officials and the mayor and a bunch of other people. And it was like a 7-point list of things that we thought would change the climate of police community relations. And everything that was like on the list, the mayor was watching us clearly, but she, like, everything that was on the list, she kind of put it in a pending phase. So that was right after the body cameras thing came up. And then she was like, oh, well, it's in committee right now. So it was like everything that was on our list, she kind of put it in a pending kind of state. So, I mean, outside of the lawsuits, everything is kind of still pending. Like, it's really a strange place to be in, where you're kind of like in limbo, waiting to hear something or for someone to really say, hey, this is a problem. You know, the state's attorney at the time, Greg Bernstein, he told us, 154 days after, that he wasn't going to press any charges to the police officers because they, quote-unquote, acted within reason. But he didn't do a thorough investigation whatsoever. And even the mayor and the police commissioner saying that they did their own independent review, they didn't. They didn't actually investigate. They just took the information and had someone else look at it and say something different. But no one went out. No one found out that 2 weeks prior to my cousin being murdered, same two police officers that initiated his beating and death, they had almost beat to death a man a few blocks away in that same neighborhood named Abdul Salam.
Yeah, I just read about that. He said they beat him almost inches to his life, didn't they?
If anyone had did any type of investigation, they would have, at minimum, fired those police officers, at minimum. Mm-hmm. But nothing happened on any level, which it kind of makes me a little leery when I hear about things pending and like legally, because it's mostly just so that people don't destroy things. that's really what it is. It's like, okay, we're afraid that people are going to destroy stuff, so we're going to pretend as if we care long enough so that people get tired. That's the game they play. They wear you down so that you lose that energy behind you to fight. So
yeah, that's what I was going to say. It sounds like they're just trying to pacify for the time being. Like, we'll keep it pending, and they'll be quiet at some point in time, and then we'll just keep it pending forever. But I think at this point in time, no one is willing to no longer be quiet. And I think this kind of goes on to what you guys both said earlier. Now that it's affecting not just somebody you see on the news, but now it's your cousin, your brother, your uncle, someone that you just spoke to this morning. This is not like a one-off. This is not it happened to somebody, friend. Like, this is affecting home for more and more people. So we definitely have to come together, because it could be your cousin. You're going to be pissed when you stand alone in the rain and everybody else posts a Facebook status about it. Like, that's not helping the situation. Mm-hmm. So we have to help each other all of the time, whether it's your cousin, somebody you know, whatever. Like, even if you don't know them, if it's close to you, try to support, send some prayers, send some love. Like, we just have to come together on a whole, or else you're going to be standing alone all the time. And the government, as you said, they're not helping nobody that's not making no noise. And you can't make no noise with three or four people. So,
exactly. But I do have one thing that for people who, because, you know, all of us on this phone, we have, you know, we know what happened to your cousin. But for people who do not know, because I'm sure it's people who listen who, you know, are kind of grasping the concept, but tell us about what actually took, what were the circumstances surrounding your cousin's death? Why was he actually stopped? You know, you said that the state's attorney said that the police acted within reason. What was the true story, and then what was the official story that came out? Because, you know, they always had the official story where it's like, yeah, you know, this is the shit that we're saying. Y'all better believe it, and don't push us any further on it.
Right.
So speak to that for me.
So the official story was that they even had to tell them themselves because it was so ridiculous. Initially, I mean, we found out about it from watching the news, and my cousin recognized her car on the news. So that was how our family found out that my cousin was murdered. And it wasn't until the next day that they came and talked to us and said anything. No one would tell us anything for days. But going back to the story, they said he was they said they pulled him over that for some illegal, they said he was doing a dipping motion in the car with someone else, which we were like, what is that? Ended up being like when your head is like bobbing up and down or something like that. And so that movement tells police that people are dealing drugs, which all of it was just like so ridiculous. It was crazy. And he was driving slowly through an intersection or something like that. So he was being quote unquote suspicious, which made these police officers pull him over. What he actually was doing was eating a chicken box with his friend that he had picked up, and he was dropping her off to the house. And I mean, if you drive through Kelway and Kitmore, it's kids playing. This is the middle of the summer, so it's kids playing. It's I believe it's like bumps in the road, like the speed humps. So it's like telling someone that you were driving suspicious by driving slowly through a residential neighborhood is absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, it's crazy. So they pulled him over, but they really pulled him over because he was black and driving a Mercedes Benz. When they pulled him over, the witnesses said he had his license in his hand out the car to show them his license. So I'm not sure whether they pulled his hair at this moment or whether they pulled his hair while he was seated on the curb. At some point, they had him seated on the curb. They said they saw drugs in his sock. Wow, he didn't have drugs on him. And they said because he had on shorts. He had on pants that day. Or no, they said he had on pants, so they saw the drugs when he sat down on the curb in his sock. But he had on shorts. So and we never got any of his items back, which is another thing that is I'm telling you, when you're actually involved in this stuff and you see how many lies they tell, it's insane. Then the officer, I guess he said something that they didn't like, so the officer proceeds to pull him by his dreadlocks and proceeds to beat on him. And they call that an altercation. That's not an altercation. You're physically assaulting someone for nothing. And so he's yelling, he's screaming for help. He's yelling Trayvon Martin, somebody help. He's like running back and forth from one side of the street to the other the entire time. They're beating on him, they're hitting him with batons, they're hitting him with their fists, they're pepper spraying him, they're macing him, they're beating. I mean, it was just awful. It was long, and all the people in the neighborhood that saw it were like so upset when they met us. It's still hard to go over in that neighborhood because, I mean, they beat on him even after he stopped moving. And then to top it off, they had someone from Morgan, the police officer from Morgan, come and sit on his back.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know who could have survived something like that, but on top of everything, because we can't forget the medical examiner's office, because they're always in cahoots with all of these things. The medical examiner's office gave this strange description for how he died, where people had never heard anything like that. It was like dehydration exacerbated by the heat and a heart arrhythmia exacerbated by dehydration and heat. It's like, so the way they described it was they were taking him into custody. He fell out and for no reason, and then he died in the hospital, where all the witnesses said he died on that street. So it's just a lot of things with stuff like that where they lied. They hid his body for 5 days so that we couldn't see him. They had never said – the one thing that sticks out the most to me is, you know, when traumatic things happen, like little things stick out the most, and they had never said his name. They never said his name. And as crazy as it sounds, I was kind of praying that it wasn't him when we finally saw him. I was still holding on to hope that maybe it wasn't him. So, I mean, you know, a lot of people don't think, like, you know, yeah, you see these things in the news and it's becoming kind of like numbing, but like this stuff destroys your emotions, your family. You don't know how to think. You feel violated in every way. You don't feel safe with people who are supposed to protect you. It's emotionally disturbing. It really is.
What are the what effect has, because you said that, you know, it's a violation, and then your cousin's death has become one of the well-known stories, you know. Now you're starting to hear about the death of Tyrone West independent from Freddie Gray, because I know when Freddie Gray was first murdered, they were connecting those two cases. And now, you know, we see Tawanda, and Tawanda, we going to get you up here too. You ain't low. But we see Tawanda getting a lot of press. I think she was in Facebook's year in review. I know that she has been in several print publications.
They just released a documentary that she was a part of. She was a part of the MSNBC documentary that was focusing on Baltimore after the uprising. So I say all that to say, what has the social media attention, how has that affected your family? Because I know for every voice of support, you get a voice of just vile hatred. So what is the mental effect that has on your family? Because I want people to hear this. You know, people who are playing this back, who take liberties with the things that they say about these victims mm-hmm. on social media, you know, how does that affect your family?
Oh, my gosh. So when they first murdered my cousin, the first thing they talk about him is his criminal past, that he served his time for, he came home, and got his life together. So that's the first thing that the media responded with was, oh, well, he had this past and this past, this criminal past. So almost as if it was justification, like the way the media describes these situations is if, well, we've taken a criminal off the street for you, you should be thankful. You should be thankful that we took him off the streets for you. And it's disgusting what they do when you already know the justice system is sticking, you know, crimes on people just so people don't have to sit in jail any longer. So, you know, some people might take a charge so because they've been sitting in jail for months and they're tired of sitting in jail. So the way the system works and the media perpetuates this rhetoric about you as if, you know, if you do anything, the media perpetuates this scenario of the perfect Negro. Like, you have to be perfect for us to give you any type of humanity. And even then, we'll still question it. And it's really just ridiculous. And then on top of everything, me and my family are out there fighting. We're going to different rallies. I'm, like, begging and pleading. I'm on Twitter. I'm everywhere trying to get people to hear this story. My cousin's everywhere trying to get people to hear this story. We go all the way to D.C. We do a protest in D.C. We're doing a chant. We can't stop. We won't stop until killer cops are in cell blocks. And someone picked it up. And Fox 45 in Baltimore took a clip from that. Not right after that weekend, not after that weekend of that protest that Al Sharpton had, but after a random weekend when in New York City, someone from Baltimore drove to New York and murdered two police officers. That was the weekend that Fox 45 decided to chop up a video and make people believe that on it, my cousin, Tawanda Jones, said, "We can't stop, we won't stop, so kill a cop." This is the type of stuff that people do. The backlash that we...
I said, for the record, never said it at all.
Never said it at all. We were saying our regular chant that we say, "We can't stop, we won't stop, until killer cops are in cell blocks." And for them to go that extra mile to edit it, to tell people... The newscaster said, "Listen to this person say, 'We can't stop, we won't stop, so kill a cop.'" She didn't just let people listen to it, because she had just let people listen to it, she wouldn't have been able to lead their ears to believe it said something else. And that's the kind of games that the media plays. And the people just ate it up. I mean, they wanted to hang her. She was every type of name. I mean, like... I don't think people really understand how this type of work makes you afraid for your life. So we were already paranoid. That just amped things up to a completely different level where, like, we're, like, looking around. We need security now. It's like people are walking up to the protest and you don't know whether you want to embrace them or put your arm out because you don't know what they might do to you. You're always looking around for suspicious people. And we were just out there doing something the right, quote unquote, the right way. And that was the response that we got. So that's just how it goes, where not only did they drag my cousin Tyrone West through the mud, and he's the victim, but they also dragged his sister just for trying to stand up for him. So, you know, they can say what they want to, but everything points to the fact that they don't like people who do things the right way.
Yeah, I personally have, like I said, I followed her on Facebook for a while, and I've seen, I don't know how long ago it was, but it was just like almost a couple of days apart, like her tires were slashed. And she was just like, yeah, okay, you know, I'll come outside, my tires, and she had a picture like, yeah, we're on the side of the road, but we're still on the way. I think she's on the way to a protest or on the way, you know, to do something, and her tires were slashed. And I was like, man, that's crazy. Like, I couldn't imagine, you know, living like that, especially off of something that, one, I didn't do. You know what I'm saying? Like, she didn't do anything. And then what she's claimed to have done, she didn't do at all. It could be further from the truth, but she's paying, you know, for the repercussions, basically, of others. So I really feel, and people don't realize how, when certain people say that the odds are against us, or we have a lot of barriers to cross, or a lot of things to fight against, it's almost like they feel like we're just selling wolf tickets, like we're just talking the talk. But y'all are right now the example of, no, like, the barriers are there, the walls are there. They don't want you to, you know, succeed in anything when it comes to something like this. They don't want the truth to be heard. So that's just crazy. I had to say that just to, for our listeners to understand, like, the seriousness. Like, I've never spoken to you a day in my life before just now, and I can back that up. Like, I saw that with my own eyes.
No, just the other day, we were at an event, and we come out, and we see, like, a unmarked police van, and we're like, why are they, like, parked, like, a couple cars away from her or whatever. So we all get in the car. My cousin, we pull off. My cousin, she tells us to pull back over. She's like, my car's driving funny. We pull over into the gas station. All the cats off of her tires are gone. Like, somebody took all the cats off my tires and must have, like, pushed down on her car, because now her air pressure was out of her car, and all the tops were gone. This is crazy stuff. Like, who has time for that? Like, clearly they have time for that.
They got all the time in the world.
Yeah, they have so much time that it's kind of scary. Like, I think a lot of us are still a big part of why I still protest and why I still do what I do is to wake people up who think this isn't real. And if we hadn't been out there doing what we did, there'd be a lot of people who would still be going about things as if people deserve to be treated like that. It's a lot of things that black people, that we just tend to accept as our reality. And we shouldn't. Not if I pay 100% of my taxes out of my check, every check. It's certain things that I don't feel I should have to accept as my reality just because of the color of my skin.
Mm-hmm.
Not in America.
If you follow me on Facebook, you saw my rant today, so you already know we're dealing with that every day. Every day, just the color brown makes people nervous. And when you have intelligence, maybe a little diction, maybe, you know, a little bit of wit to you, or you're just not passive, it's always seen differently, whether you're male or female. Unfortunately for our males, it often turns violent. For our women, it often turns dismissive, I feel like, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely an issue that we cannot keep acting like, oh, it's not happening, oh, it don't happen, oh, you know, let's not ignore these talks or conversations or feel like it's us, because I think a lot of times we look at ourselves and feel like we're the problem, when that really is not even it.
Mm-mm. Not it at all.
What I'm going to do is, right now we're going to pause, take a couple callers, and then we're going to get back into it. So, callers, when you hear your number, take this time to look down on your phone, figure out what your phone number is. So I'm going to say the first 6 minutes, and I'm going to bring you on the line, okay? So
look, y'all got
caller,
one chance.
410-690-6969. 693. Are you there? 410-693. You're live.
Everybody speak up and see whether we hear you.
Okay, so 410-693, and we'll put you back on mute. If you have something else to say, then press 1 again. Let's try another one.
You can also put your messages in the chat if you don't feel like talking or if you miss or something like that. Feel free to put it in the chat as well.
Sure. Now, we have 443-722. Are you there with us? 443-722. You're live. Okay. Let's see who else got. Yeah, we just would see this. Let's see. 410-624.
Hello?
410. Yes. 410-624. Is that you?
Yeah, this is me. This is PFK Boom.
Hi. PFK, what's going on?
What's up? You know, peace. I'm always there. You know what's up. Salute, Butler. You know you're doing a beautiful job, as well as you too, Queen. But again, the front line work, as I always say, come through y'all. And I do appreciate definitely how, you know, you explaining it, and as well as addressing the social ills of our city on all ends. As we know, you just don't do Tyrone. You do many other things. I just wanted to call in and say definitely keep that front line of sword up in the air and do what y'all do. But again, both of y'all in there doing what y'all do, and salute to all the listeners.
Thank you, Mom.
Thank you. But while we got you, we're not going to let you go that easy. since you are frontliner, you know, our first line of defense, I'm going to ask you a question. When people say, why are we protesting against police brutality instead of addressing black on black crime, what is a response for that? Because I hear that all the time. Like, why are we worried about brutality? People in the black community are killing each other all the time. But don't we have initiatives and programs that address that? Speak on that, King.
We got a lot of programs that address black on black crime, and I always wanted to address that issue right there, which is, of course, our backyard. You know, backyard work never usually gets done. Everybody looks at the front yard with the roses and all the topics that are out, Freddie Gray, of course. You know, a lot of our other topics that, of course, like Butler just said, the news or the media, they're full of dirty tricks, so they would never show the black-on-black resurrection that we have in Baltimore. I'm a prime example of the black-on-black resurrection. Myself used to be in a guy that used to be all, you know, I'm 41, being reckless inside of Baltimore City. And to meet the elders that I walk with every day to this very day, I have elders that walk with me in my nation, and they were some of the elders that helped us. Elders do not blare out them correcting a younger youth or a young man like myself. That's not something that they run to the news and say, I help. Blah, blah, blah. I got a man on the ground now, been helping young men since 1980, and he goes all over the city, Mr. Naeem Ajamu. You won't hear about his work when he's under the bridge trying to get young ladies from, you know, being prostitutes and things. That's black on black right there. But see, in our situation, we try not to look at it as a, you know, because the same way the body's dropping in the black community, they dropping in the white community. But, of course, that news ain't going to show that. They dropping out there in the Mexican community and things like that. But, again, it's not for them to just, not for us to wait till they drop. Don't drop it or do drop it. And then you come in Baltimore and see our social ill. But, again, it is a lot of black, anybody that's yelling, what about black on black? Well, there go your job. Because me and Butler and yourself got the other front line stuff. Okay, have you seen that black-on-black problem? You need to find a black-on-black problem and go right around the corner and handle it. Don't be coming at us about no what, when, and where. We are in a state of emergency right now that everybody, even our children in Baltimore City, has an obligation right now. Little do people know. But, yes, at this state of emergency with blood on the ground, the system the way it is, again, anybody coming at us with that black-on-black, unfortunately, we are handling the international issues of black-on-black situations now. So everybody else, which is 600-some thousand people in Baltimore, I only see less than about a good 60 with me and Butler when we do our thing. We got another 600 something, you know what I mean, another 500 some thousand people that can go out there and get away from their table or come out. People that come out with Butler and us come out dinner time. We don't get home sometimes at 8 o'clock at night, you know what I mean? And they got kids, white, black, yellow, green, some from Baltimore, some are not, and they're coming out of their houses, when I make the statement, all white ain't white, to come and address a black-on-black issue. So, yeah, it's real out here. Like I say, anybody that's coming to our city, our women, as well as ourselves, we control the language. When someone comes to you talking about black-on-black, if they're white or black, where's the first black problem that you see at, and I will assist you. PFK Bowl will send you where you need to go to handle it, because I can't do that part right now at that level. I can't do, you know, that part right, but I know you can. Let's go. And that's where the problem comes in. We got to look in our own mirrors, cold-blooded. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you ain't waking up and saying, what can I do for my city today, then I think you need to leave my city, because my city right now needs that type of citizens, returning citizens from prison, people who want change and things like that. But if you ain't really, you just coming home with your check, and you just coming home and putting something down on the table, and you think you got that nice house, but when it hits your door, you're calling Butler. Butler, my kid got killed. Could you help me? Or they calling myself. And they the people that we talk to. You're someone that been in that situation if you came to holler at us first. We got safe zones in Baltimore, little do people know right now. Handling black-on-black crime. People don't even know that because people come at PFK Boom and Butler and us to say we ranting or raving. I got 50 men on the ground in some of the most illest communities in Baltimore City. They don't get paid for nothing. We just throw out all black on and attack the areas of the community. How you doing, little man? How you feeling? What's popping? We know what he look like. Shorty, put your pants up, man. Hey, you going to school today? Why are you walking past me 11 o'clock in the evening and you ain't in school, but I'm supposed to be the adult? Yeah, all right. You know what I mean? That's where the black-on-black crime get taken care of. So we going to win, I'm trying to tell you.
You already know.
We already going to win. I got you. I'm telling you, we out here.
I get a lot of, you know, no shot to anybody, but I hear a lot of people who talk about, you know, I have my own personal issues. I got to get myself together before I can help somebody else. You know, well, I don't know what to do. You know, they feel like because they are taking care of their home and their children, that's enough, and it's not enough. I mean, activism, being involved in your community, is one of the most fulfilling things that you will ever do with your life. One of the most fulfilling things. Like, a lot of us have financial problems, relationship problems, family problems. You know, people who are actually involved in this movement, we have problems as well. But you know what? We don't say, I'm going to only worry about myself. We say, no, I'm going to give to my community. I'm going to make myself a servant to my people. And that's what it's all about for real.
And that beautiful statement you just made, Baltimore City, which don't even know that my oldest kids are 23 and 22 years old. My son go to California, Berkeley. My daughter, a nurse, because of the citizens of Baltimore. When I'm sitting up there in prison, and these people out here is the ones who made sure that my kids are Baltimore's kids, where they say that we can't do what we do. They went to California, Berkeley. He'd be home this year as a senior, coming right out of these hoods. That's what community do. You know, that's what it do. It puts our babies out there to be able to be what they need to be when we drop the ball as parents, and the community can pick them up. And that's what picked my babies up when I was sitting up there being in self-inflicted nonsense, participating in the murder coach's ways. So that's how it goes.
I was actually going to speak on that. Like, even what you're saying, people saying, like, oh, I take care of my kids, so that's all I need to do. I mean, in my opinion, like, to really take care of your kids, you will be, you already will be within the community. Because to pay attention to your children, you have to pay attention to their friends. Their friends know you. Mm-hmm. You are a role model. You are somebody to them. So that when you touch them, and then whoever their friends may come around, you talking to them, you talking to their parents. Now you're into a community. It doesn't have to be a march. It doesn't have to be a political thing. It could just be a day-to-day. If you're really taking care of your seed, and then your seed is sprouting, and as it sprouts, you continue to grow with it, then you will have this community around you that you are improving, because now you're communicating with people around you. Where I see, you know, I don't live in Baltimore, but out here in the DMV, I've lived in D.C., I've lived in PG County, I've lived in Virginia, and neighbors don't speak. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Neighbors don't, they don't talk. They, you walk past people, they don't say anything. And if you do say something to somebody, they look like you crazy. So if you get to the point where, you are very attentive to your children, and like you said, making sure that they doing the things like going to a good school and being better than we were, being put in position better than we were, and you're really cognitive of what they're doing, you will be doing work in the community, taking them to a football practice, taking them to a basketball practice, talking to the parents at the basketball practice, talking to the parents at the football practice, being involved, then you are helping the community. It does not take a whole bunch of ruckus in order to make things happen. So that would be my answer to people who are always talking about black-on-black crime. If you do want to make sure you just keep it at home, keep it at home, but make sure you keep it thorough at home. Don't just say, I make sure he did his homework tonight, so I did my job. Absolutely not. Make sure that you're in your child's life. And then that's step one. That's phase one. Let's move on to the next.
There we go. Yeah. Quoco, thank you for supporting us. I'm going to put you that on me so we can get some more callers. But
absolutely.
I definitely trying to connect with you. You know I see you out doing this work.
I got you. I see y'all. Be safe. I love y'all. Be safe.
Thank you. Okay, let's hit another caller. 443-876, you're live. 443-876, you there? Hello, 443-876.
Come on, guys, you guys are usually on point.
Okay, I'm going to put you back on mute. And we got, it looks like, an Atlanta caller. 404-921.
Yeah, what's up, y'all? I'm just listening, and I'm sitting here listening. Sounds like a lot of good work is being done. I commend y'all as listening to each dinner. You know what I mean?
Hello? Peace to you, Kang. Thank you for supporting us. Thank we really you. Appreciate that.
Thank you. We appreciate the love.
All day.
Okay. So, yes, let's build on that. Let's talk about this gun violence that's going on in the Baltimore area. Now, I'm not up on the D.C. stats, but I know here in Baltimore, I think we're at 336.
Yeah, and D.C. is at 159 this year, which is 63% up from last year, because I Googled all of this shit today. So you're on with Baltimore, but we're at 159.
Now, you know, what we wanted to do is we wanted to get some people on the line. It looks like our callers, maybe they fell asleep or something. It's okay. But we really wanted to hear from people who have been affected by the gun violence because it's just so rampant out here in the streets. And it's heartbreaking. You know, it's heartbreaking to see so many of our young brothers and sisters and our youth being cut down in their prime, you know, cut down in their prime before they even have the time to, you know, grow into adulthood or make anything of their lives, you know, just being completely wiped out. Now, Key, I know you out there in the community or whatever. What new initiatives have you heard of that have come across your desk that are going to address this gun violence issue that we have, because we have a lot of people wondering, what are we going to do? You know, I know we have 300 men. I know we have Safe Streets. Shout out to Tiffany Fox. I see you out there working, girl. So have you heard of any new ventures in our city that are going to be taking off in the new year that are going to address this issue?
Those are the ones I actually was going to name outside of the listening campaign that I'm putting together now. I really don't know what the city has in mind. I think it's interesting to see the governor talk about the riots, and, you know, he said something along the lines of, well, why are they rioting when there's all of these homicides in their city, and there's no riot for that, which was just so ignorant of him. That's the only way I can describe it. And him being the governor and not trying to give state monies to programs that do that type of work, what kind of response was that? But it was absolutely ridiculous that, you know, the city can find money for more riot gear and riot training, but they can't seem to find any more money. Mm-hmm. You said what?
And salary raises. Don't forget about that.
Yeah.
You know, Stephanie and them, they got salary raises. They just released that information.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, you know, you guys can give yourself a slight raise, but, you know, you're taking money away from education. You're taking money away from recreation centers. Where are the rec centers? There's just no programs for kids. This is a very poor city that I think people don't really address that issue, is that the black population it deals with a lot of poverty. And there should be more programs, especially in a democratic city, that shields those people. I mean, you got the homeless out here that you're not even being taken care of. You're moving them from a place that's already outside. It's just craziness, really, when you don't see the people who use the – that's why I get mad at people who say, oh, well, we need to stop killing each other because, you know, black-on-black crime, and they use it as a justification for something else. You shouldn't, simply because that's the same justification that they'll use against you to not help you. That, you know what I mean? It's like they're using that rhetoric that we're accepting to be true against us, and we need to stop that. When you give people rhetoric that they're using to justify the brutality of you and the mistreatment of you, you're giving them the tool to do these things too. You're telling them it's okay. Like, you know, when they say, you know, look at that Negro's bad or whatever, you know, and you agree, you're talking about yourself. There's no distinguishing you from that person. You're all lumped together. So I don't know why people don't realize that in itself.
Yeah, it is a bit annoying when the only time you hear people speak about black-on-black crime is in a response to someone speaking about police brutality. Like, you don't see it just free-willing coming out. It's just like, you, even if it's just a Facebook or even a conversation, you mention something about police brutality, and then they say, but what about? It's like, why did you leave the conversation about black-on-black crime then? Like, I mean, you didn't have to just respond to mine with that. But that is crazy.
Right.
It makes it on my nerves, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to me, it's kind of like Stockholm Syndrome. You know, like, our people are so used to being abused by our oppressor that we have come to take on the attitude of our oppressor. And it's kind of, you know, when you said that, you know, a lot of us, we played into those respectability politics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We played into that wholeheartedly. And then we realized that it doesn't matter. You know, people in suits and dresses, they got lynched too.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what you dress like. It doesn't matter what shade of black you are. It doesn't matter if you're a millionaire or you're homeless. When they pull your black ass out that car or they pull you up, all they know is that you are a black man or a black woman who is doing something that puts you on that radar. It don't matter, you know, at all.
Yeah, and I tell you, the biggest issue, I mean, even with all kinds of crime, not just murder, but with just crimes in our community, come from, like you said something earlier about community centers and stuff like that, like giving kids and young people something to do so that they're not, you know, just sitting around with an idle mind. Because when I grew up, and like me and Bianca, I've known her since I was like 13, 12, whatever. And I came from PG County, and there was no, like, community centers and rec centers. And if there were, they weren't really utilized as well. When I moved over to Virginia, the rec center was almost like a staple. Like, everyone had their specific rec center they went to. You had your little friends at that rec center. You went to rec after school, even if your parents didn't make you. Like, you would go to the rec. It gave you something to do. And even though we were kids, we got into trouble still. But it probably was nowhere near the amount of trouble we would have got into had the rec center not been the place to go. And then when I went back to PG County afterwards, in my eighth grade year, it was totally different. There was nothing after school. So what happens, people are like, yo, well, let's go get high. I got some weed. And it's like, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, that's the devil, but that's when things start to happen. You have nothing else to do. So now you're creating things, and your parents not home yet. So those things are important, and they shouldn't be overlooked. It shouldn't just be, like you said, just, oh, my house is straight. We do have to look into things like that in our community that will bring more of a community feeling within it, you know, where it's not separation everywhere you go. It's somewhere we can all come together.
Yeah, and I was actually going to kind of say the same thing, Keith, because I know our experience for me was a lifesaver. Like a lot of kids that grew up in Alexandria or in the city or suburbs of Baltimore, D.C., whatever the case may be, a lot of us are what they call, like to call, latchkey kids or whatever the case may be. So there is nobody home for you when you get home. You old enough to, you know, come home, do your homework or whatever, but when we were going to the rec, and I believe at the time of Alexandria, there were maybe five of them, which is a lot for Alexandria, which is very small. So that in itself was a great thing, because when we got there, they were like, you got to do your homework before you can play pool, before you can get to the snack machine or whatever the case may be. And if you weren't there that day, somebody was looking for you. Like, it was just an accountability of community. And, you know, like Keith said, you know, we were kids, so sometimes we stuck away from the rec or whatever the case may be, but when somebody's mother saw you or somebody's coach saw you, best believe somebody knew that you weren't where you were supposed to be. And there comes in that community again. And I don't know if Alexandria still has those things, but I noticed that they don't exist at all. Like, where do these kids go that have nothing to do or that cannot afford AAU sports or afford to be in clubs or go to trips and afford any after-school care or stuff like that? Like, what is there for them to do but to get in trouble? And I think that will help to address black-on-black crime, all types of crime, truancy, all types of things, really, on a grander scale.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, because we didn't, like, they do still have those programs, by the way. Like, my niece goes to Patrick Henry now, which is funny. And she goes to the rec after school, but I just don't know what age they stop allowing the kids to come in. But yeah, like I feel like that things like that are very key. And I mean, I don't want to go too far deep, but I feel like that's the only thing, because I go to church. It's the one thing I feel like the church started to lack on within our communities is providing like daily things and being open daily. As it kind of was when I was growing up, like I always had to go to church, and it seems like these kids never really have to go. And I'm not saying that the religion part of it is what's going to save them, but just like I said, being not in the street, you know, being around adults that were, you know, mindful and trying to be a positive influence in their life is the most important key to a child's development. So we just have to look at things like that. If you really want to eradicate the generational problems, which is what we're having, you have to address those issues within your youth around you, whether it be a nephew, a friend, a cousin, a son, a daughter. That's a way that you can fight it and really get to the root problem of what we're having in our communities, because it's sad. It's sad. This summer in D.C. was sad. Every day was a murder. I mean, multiple murders. Like, it was sickening. So, just because we scream police brutality, we scream stop black on black crime too. So, get out of here.
Yeah, and I want to make that distinction. The fact that the reason why, for me personally, police brutality is a problem is because when we have an issue or when you feel unsafe, the police are the ones that you call. Okay?
You don't call Ray Ray from around the corner. You don't call Peanut from down the street. You call the police. So it's more than just a black issue. It's the fact that the police are killing the homeless. They're killing the mentally ill. You know, Maurice Ashby from Fix Baltimore, shout out to Fix Baltimore, he often says, you know, they're purging. They're killing off those who are deemed less than desirable members of society. When Ray Ray and Peanut kill somebody, they go into jail for life, or they go into the death chamber, or somebody on the street is going to kill them. But when police officers kill someone, there's no sense of peace for the families. There's no sense of accountability. So you have a lot of thugs out here with badges and guns, and they're just running around our communities. It's not every cop, but the good cops who stand there and let it happen. You know, just like sir who in the Freddie Gray case, he was recently, his trial was the first one, and it was declared a mistrial. You know, I listened to the testimony, so listening to him, I could kind of glean his experience, saying that, you know, this has become my hood for real. I know these people. I'm traumatized by what happened because I feel like I should have done more, but I honestly didn't know that he was hurt that bad. You know, the police officers that stand there and let it happen, they're part of the problem too. You turn a blind eye when your fellow cops are making racist and sexist jokes. You turn a blind eye when you see them beating people, robbing people, stealing from them, because the corruption is so widespread. So if you turn a blind eye to that, then you can't call yourself a good cop. Not in my opinion. Not at all.
Right. I don't have any sympathy for him, for Officer Porter. I personally don't have any sympathy for him or any of the other officers that are on trial because, one, with that situation, they're already making it seem as if our eyes are lying to us, as if the video of Freddie Gray being taken into custody didn't go viral because he was already injured before he was put into the van. So everyone's lying to us off top. And this is the type of stuff that they do, is they feed you a lie from the beginning so that they can just continue to lie throughout.
I know, we focus on this police van and seatbelt and procedure. Who was supposed to lock them up? Were we supposed to put them in the van? You know, how were we supposed to? We're talking about what happened in the van, but they had already fucked him up to the point where he could not walk. Before he even got in the van, before he even made it in there. So to say that, you know, his injuries may have been exacerbated by being in that van unbuckled, but no, he was already, you know, severely injured before he even made it into the van. So we can't let them, you know, I don't like to use the word distraction. But they will distract us. They will deflect. They will say, oh, no, it wasn't the fact that we beat the shit out of him before he got in the van, which we know happens all the time. If you live in Baltimore, you have either witnessed or you know someone who has been pulled into an alley by the police and been fucked up. If you have ever watched The Wire, you know, I mean, they took it and they put it on film. They said, this is what the fuck we do. We ride around, we get mad, we about to go fuck somebody up.
Yep.
That's what The Wire taught us. The Wire taught us how the police in Baltimore think. It taught us that they had to sneak around, they had to lie, they had to plant shit, plant illegal wire traps, all to get, a couple drug dealers off the street?
Right.
So what do you think that they do in real life? What do you think that they doing to our sons and our brothers and our fathers and our grandfathers out here in the street? Where do you think the guns are coming from? Who do you think is flooding the communities with drugs? I don't know nobody with no planes around this motherfucker.
Who buying bullets?
Exactly. Where they are, I guess all of the gang members are
you know, they're just robbing people for all of these hundreds of guns that they would need to commit these crimes. That's right. What you're telling us. That's what the media and the police are trying to tell us, that this is all happening out of thin air. They don't know what's causing it. It's not the fact right. that after the riots, you know, there was basically a documented police slowdown. You know, the police were going on the news anonymously and saying, yeah, we're not doing no work. We don't fuck with mm-hmm. City Hall either. We don't fuck with the people. We're not doing shit.
Yeah, the same way America doesn't know how Taliban and ISIS got them guns that we supplied to them X amount of years ago. We always blind right. to the bullshit, our government, as you may know, so it's not surprising at all.
It's just ridiculous, really. That's really why I don't have sympathy for him or any of the other officers, because he was already screaming in pain before he got in the van. They already knew that he had already been injured. But instead of them knowing that he was already hurt like that and seeing that they didn't put him in the seatbelt or anything, because they didn't put him in a seatbelt because his back was already broken. That's why they didn't put him in a seatbelt. They couldn't sit up. But I don't have any sympathy for them because they saw how badly he was already injured and they didn't take him to the hospital. Black, white, I don't care what you are. You saw that this human needed medical assistance, and you looked at him and you drove around and around for blocks. I have no sympathy for them. None.
I feel you. Well, we do have another caller. Let's see if we can knock this caller out real quick. 980-395, you're live. Are you there? 980-395, you're live.
This how y'all going to do us tonight? Out of all night?
I know, y'all don't want to talk to me.
I think some of these people might be agents, you know. It's okay, FBI, if you listen to us. Get some of this knowledge that we drop into. It's okay. Because that's exactly what I think that is. That, you know, we might have some little agents on the line, but, you know, that just makes me feel like we're doing the right thing. And that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a lot
of questions. I want to ask this since we have a couple more minutes left. How do you feel, Kiara, about police and body cams in general? I know that's something your family has fought for, but on just kind of on a larger scale, like, what do you think about it? How do you think it would affect the community, Baltimore, D.C., whomever?
I think body cameras are necessary to continue to show people what's happening. I don't think it'll change the mentality of the police or their aggression towards people, but I think it will continue to prove what we're saying is true. Because they're just basically trying to say, like, they just lie. So, you know, it'll just continue to prove that they're lying. But I mean, it gets to a place where you're like, after you've proved enough times that the police lie in enough cities, when is the federal government going to do a complete revamp of the way policing is done in America? You know, they can go from state to state and city to city and do these investigations. Why don't they investigate the entire nation? Why don't they put mm-hmm. something in place for the entire nation? It's like, you jiving us, really. And it's bogus. Until I see that day where the federal government steps in and says, this will be implemented throughout the nation for police to address this issue, this national issue, I don't know. I really don't see any type of real justice happening because it's so obvious to them that it's a national issue, and they really don't care. They just want it to go away.
I think those are great points. And I do actually have a question in the chat. I'm going to pose this question to you, Kiara, because out of all of us, you're the one, I believe, that, of course, you've been through it, so you can answer it the best. But we did have Lori comment, and she said, what do you think that folks should do if they find themselves facing the murder of a loved one? Would it be different if it were the police as opposed to black-on-black crime? And again, what what would you do, or what do you think that someone in that predicament or a family in that predicament should do, or where should they start?
Wow, that's a really good question. I would tell them to start in the same place that we started, which would be to call the police, you know, talk to the police, see what they'll tell you, which probably won't be a lot. I mean, we didn't even get a name for 5 days. So I would say in both situations, you start with the police because they're the people that were on the scene. Then what we did that was very helpful was we got an attorney immediately. We went to the neighborhood and we canvassed the neighborhood and sent out flyers for them to contact the attorney. We didn't personally talk to the people, but the people wanted to talk to us. But we allowed them to go and contact the attorney. So get an attorney and contact the police and then get an attorney if it's, like, police involved. If it's an interpersonal crime, I would say after you contact the police to ask them about a community liaison or some type of counseling, even in terms of police brutality, because that's something that was very, very important to my family and really helped us recover from all that we went through. Because, I mean, what people don't see, you know, with all these murders is the emotional weight it puts on you. I mean, a lot of people that I talk to, if you didn't know before what I was involved in, you might not have even known the full story from me or heard it from me. This might be a lot of people's first time hearing me talk about it because it's that emotionally taxing. Like, I can't even go in the neighborhood without crying because it's I saw what it did to my family and I saw how they did my cousin. And it's really it's something that won't go away. So seek emotional help, counseling. Seek family because that's been my biggest support system from day one. Seek out family and friends. And just keep seeking the truth and keep speaking your truth. And no one can deny that.
That's good. I have one more question that kind of goes along those lines, if we have time. with the murder and everything and y'all fighting for everything, how has the response been from, I guess, law office, let's say, within our community, whether it be, you know, African-American lawyers or even, you know, non-African-American lawyers and high power people? How has a genuine response been? Have people reached out to help, you know, represent, to get things done? Because I always felt like that's one thing that could happen with all these high-profile cases, that we have a team or group come together of lawyers that would dedicate their actions to a lot of the high-profile police brutality murders and things of that nature to try to get some justice in those situations. So with me being on the outside looking in, how has their response been from them? Have y'all received a lot of people wanting to represent? Has it been kind of like people were scared to touch it? Like, what's it been like?
No, I will say the lawyers, especially the black lawyers in Baltimore, have been pivotal in helping us along the way. Jill Carter, I mean, our lawyer right now is Dwight Pettit. So, I mean, he's, you know, spoken on television and radio shows about it, always fighting for us. You have J. Wendell Gordon, always fighting for us, you know, very, very active. Jill Carter, you know, in Annapolis, she's fighting all by herself, just trying to get things, get laws passed for us. I would say J. Wendell Gordon went to Annapolis with us last year. Oh, that's a big thing that I need to ask everybody to participate in this year. If you can, please make it out to Annapolis this year. We're trying to get the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights amended. We need bodies. We need people there. We need testimony. We need people showing that your voters care about this situation, and we need these things amended, especially people from different parts of Maryland that represent different parts of Maryland, because that was a big thing that we faced last year in Annapolis was people weren't, other people from other jurisdictions were saying, well, this is a Baltimore issue, so we're not going to pass this state, we're not going to change the state legislation for a Baltimore issue. So if you please can come to Annapolis, I'm pretty sure you'll be hearing things soon about buses taking people to Annapolis. Please, please try to participate, as well as if you can make it to a Wednesday a month, to West Wednesday, please be out there. They're at 6:30. They're in different locations. You can follow when the protests will be and where they'll be on Justice for Tyrone West, the Facebook page. But that's just my spiel. Sorry, y'all got off topic.
No worries.
No,
worries.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We just thank you for coming and kicking it with us. You know, I'm sure that you're a busy lady, so I know that you have a million places to be, especially out with your family right now. But we thank you for coming on the show with us. And before we close out, make sure you drop that date for the next Be More Collab event. Shout out to Be More Collab and my honey, Candace.
January the 12th at 6 o'clock, 6:30.
Okay. I think and 6:30. Just give like a little 1 minute description of what Be More Collab is.
Be More Collab is the creation of a functioning body in Baltimore where instead of people trying to take on the load of other body parts and other functions and other gifts, we function in our gift and we function in that way together as one body. And that's what Be More Collab is a collaboration of people of like minds that are willing to do their gift together so that we can function properly as one. Because right now Baltimore has us in a way that we're functioning in ways that aren't necessarily our gifts, and they're telling us that that's the way that we are supposed to function. And that's why a lot of the things we see are messed up, but we want to put people in their gift and work together, basically creating a functioning community, really.
That's dope. And I will see you on the 12th because I'll be there too.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the first event. It was an amazing experience to connect with other people in Baltimore who are out here doing the work. You know, here at YBE, it's the work that matters to us. It's the things that we're doing to connect with the community. So, again, on January 8th, we will be out at Come Together at Red.
Yay!
Yes,
I'm excited.
The Spotlight organization. So please come out and support us and support Keith. And also, thank you, Keith, for kicking it with us. You can look forward to hearing him a lot more with us on the air. He definitely brings a great flavor to the airways with us. So I appreciate you, King.
Thank you for having me.
JV, you know, as always, I appreciate you, and I thank you for creating this platform for us. Any last remarks? We got about a minute.
I just want to say thank you to everyone for listening on another show. We appreciate it. I check the stats every day, and every day you guys are listening and downloading. So even if you're not catching it live, you're still listening. I myself appreciate the love. We appreciate the love, and we will continue to hear your voices. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, all of that good stuff, and we love to hear from y'all. Have a good night and happy holidays. If you celebrate Christmas and a happy new year, we'll see y'all in January, guys.
And as always, I ask that the Creator covers you all with safety and blessings, and that wherever you go, you carry knowledge, love, and power. Ashe, good night.
Ashe, good night, everybody.
Good night. Ashe.